on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Delicious things to eat.
Oh yeah, don't you know
the
it?
The popcorn can't be beat.
Time to talk movies and more. Alan Adams joining us in studio for Pass the Popcorn. Hello there, Alan.
I am joining you in studio.
Three times.
I was going to say, I figured, it's funny, I was thinking about it, and I was like, well, I'll do this today, obviously, in the next couple of weeks. And then I'm like, am I just going to, like, just show up here on Tuesday? I might.
Oh, on the last day? Well, yeah, please do. We're going to have a party. It is New Year's Eve, after all.
You know what I mean? Assuming I don't have too many... party-related tasks to deal with for the next day, but I'll try to get my chores done ahead of time.
I think Bruce is coming in and Carrie's going to be here.
Nice.
I'm going to reach out and see if we can get our old boys Stack and maybe Ryan Waning to stop by.
That would be nice.
Have a good old time, and then we're gonna torch this place.
I was gonna say burn it to the ground.
I kid. Not even suggesting we would do that, but it'd be nice to. I'm trying not to schedule a lot in terms of guests that day because I just want to be able to talk and tell stories and have a good time.
Well, and I know, like, you're like, I'm sure that the sort of like the, you know, the top of the list folks have been contacted and asked to chime in. I know you've already had a few of them in, and I'm sure more are coming in the days to come.
David Roth is the big one. I'm actually going to reach out to him tomorrow. I've talked to him already, and he's good for whatever we do. But I said, I want you on late. So maybe like that last or next to last show, I want him on. And I said, I want you late enough in the process that I won't care what I say.
Nice.
And Roth came back and said, good, I can tell the world what I thought of that Under the Dome TV version.
Oh, good stuff. That was the one name I was like, he's got to get Roth back at least one more time for sure. Who I'm sure is, both happy to do it and also, as are the rest of us, a little sad.
Well, as I told you, we're exploring the podcast medium, which is where all the cool kids are these days.
I mean, apparently so.
So if that works out, and I was saying earlier, my thought was to get like everybody on that Hall of Fame mug and make sure we got them on down the stretch. But now part of me is thinking, well, like, maybe some of these people would help us get a nice big bang on any new version of the show.
It's a good point, for sure. And I mean, podcasting, near as I can understand, I will say, I think you need to really toxify your masculinity a little bit more. And maybe get high.
Right.
And I think if you can do those two things, I'm pretty sure you will have all the listeners.
I was talking to Gary Tangway, my old buddy, last week about that, and he said, well, you got to have a hook, Richie. You got to have a hook. And I said, yeah, I got it. We're going to do naked Zoom interviews. And he goes, well, I'm going to pass on Ken Burns. I said, well, you're missing out.
Yeah, you would be surprised. Like, I mean, he looks like he's just kind of like, dude actually has an 8-pack.
Yeah, he's ripped.
I mean, just shredded.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Yes. Tell us about your beautiful and sophisticated documentary about this important historical figure. And also, can you take your shirt off?
Yes. Then I was trying to think, who among our regulars would do that? You.
Yeah, obviously.
Maybe Tobo.
I bet you could talk him into it.
Joe Riccio, without a doubt.
Yeah. A dark horse candidate for that? Perry Gilpin.
maybe. Bob Ryan, not so much.
Yeah, probably not. Probably
John
not.
Davidson, I think, would.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if I looked that good when I was his age, I would be, like, I would never wear a shirt.
John sent me, was so sweet, he sent me an email, and he's in Scotland right now.
Oh, yeah?
He's got a girlfriend over there.
Nice.
And he sent me, this beautiful video looking out his window in Scotland, just this very pastoral setting. He said, hope you find some peace in this. I thought that was really sweet.
I mean, I think it says a lot. About what you've been doing here, the relationships that you have built. with a lot of these people. Yeah. Like, I mean, I think that, I mean, I think it speaks very highly to both the quality of character with regard to the guests that you bring and the way you make them feel when they come on board. Uh-huh. Because you know what? They keep coming back.
Yeah, and we like that. So, yeah, we're doing something. I don't know what, but you know, I hope you'll be part of whatever we do going forward.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
Cool, cool. Because, again, if it's a podcast, hell, you can... You can do that from home.
I suppose that's true. And
or you can come to my house and we can sit there and have a beverage together because we're not locked. The beauty of a podcast also, you know, the more I get closer to this, the more I think seeing advantages to it, like not having to go in every day. Not that I don't enjoy it, but
you know,
it's been a long time. I don't mind a little break. And the idea that you can record these pieces of a podcast whenever it's convenient for everybody.
Right. Yep. And, you know, sit down, have a beer. I will... do you know how difficult it's been for me to watch my language for the past 12 years?
Don't have to worry about that. Podcast world?
This is what I'm saying.
That movie's a bleeping piece of bleep, let me tell you something. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
I'm getting more fired up about it as we speak. This is fantastic. All right. Just a brief reminder as we begin to talk about movies. We're still on the radio this week.
Yes, I will. Okay. I will keep it. I will keep it as clean as I usually do.
All right. What did you see?
So I saw two films for this week's segment. One on the streaming service. You might have heard of it, Netflix.
Oh yes, yes. I think I have that.
And another film that I went to the movie theaters to see. So on Netflix, I watched the action thriller Carry On. Starring Taron Egerton and Jason Bateman.
Yeah, which looks kind of interesting from the trailer.
It's, we'll get to it.
Okay. Right.
And then at the cinema, I saw what purports to be the last in the Sony Spider-Man movies without Spider-Man series with Kraven the Hunter.
Yeah, with a K, right?
Yes, with a K. and yes, one of these movies was quite good.
So why don't you let's talk about the quite good one first, because you know how I roll.
I do. It was in fact Carry On on Netflix. I didn't have a whole lot of expectation on this one, simply because, well, because it's a Netflix movie, and it's like you just you know, and we've had a couple of less than successful outings from Netflix in recent months, but I had seen a couple of trailers for this. I like Taron Egerton. I think he's a talented actor. Love me some Jason Bateman.
And the
trailers make it clear he is playing against type.
Yeah, which I'm intrigued by.
So the basic gist is Carry On. It's directed by Jaume Colissera and written by TJ Fixman. I mentioned some of the stars there. But it is basically we start off, it's Christmas Eve. A mysterious traveler meets with several Russian smugglers at a Christmas tree farm.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, that's a thing. He is doing some sort of deal with them where he gives them a bunch of money and they give him something. It's unclear what it is, but it's in a suitcase. and then he goes ahead and just murders the heck out of them. and sets the whole thing on fire. And it's like, you know what goes up real fast? A Christmas tree farm. So that's sort of our intro. And then we meet a young man by the name of Ethan Kopek. That's Taron Egerton. He's a TSA officer working at LAX, kind of drifting. He's a failed applicant to the police academy. He's got a pregnant girlfriend who is trying to urge him to gain some ambition in his life, what have you. And then... So he goes to work doing TSA stuff, and he's like, he decides, you know, he's like, you know, I want more. Like, he's like, and goes to his supervisor, played wonderfully by an unexpected Dean Norris.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice.
And so he turns up, and he's like, I want to make a go of this. And so reluctantly, his boss is like, all right, you know what? I'm going to put you on the machine today, and the machine being the X-ray machine or whatever. thanks to a buddy of his who also works there, sort of being like, you can take my spot and I'll go, I'll work the lines, it'll be fine. He's giving him an opportunity to sort of prove himself. Well, as it turns out, there was apparently some sort of meticulously planned plot to get this the aforementioned murder suitcase onto this flight, to the point where there was this whole team where they had planned to abduct the family of the guy who was supposed to be working the machine. However, it got switched. Mm-hmm. And so now our man Taron Egerton is being being sort of strong-armed into basically allowing this suitcase through. There's an earpiece. There's a whole like on conversation, and it turns out the traveler. They bill him as the traveler. He never gets a name, but it is Jason Bateman. And it turns out there's something really terrible in this suitcase that they very much want to get on this particular plane. And Taron Egerton is like his girlfriend's being threatened. He just found out she's having a baby, so he's like, he's got to help. He has to do what these guys say, even though he tries to put up these little bits of resistance, but he quickly gets slapped down. And before you know it, it is a full-on, like, we're in full-on intrigue mode, especially once we get a better sense of what's going on with the suitcase, why it's going where it's going. And, there's really only one person to save the day, and it's TSA agent Taron Egerton. I was like I said, I had fairly low expectations. I was like, oh, it'll be like a goofy Netflix banger. It'll be all right, you know, an easy enough way to kill a couple of hours. It is so much better than it needs to be. Edgerton's a really talented actor, and I think this sort of like action thriller is a good fit for him. Like he's got he's got action movie chops, and and actually a more than passable American accent, which I was not expecting. Like he because he is very much a British boy. But the real revelation here, like all the performances are pretty good. The real revelation here is Jason Bateman, who just crushes it. He is so good in this and so like menacing, like, but like in a way that sort of that weaponizes his sort of aw shucks kind of persona. Like he's not like the frothing at the mouth, shouty bad guy. Like it's kind of like there are moments where you're like, oh my God, like where like Michael Bluth has gone bad. It's not quite there, but it's like, you know, you see these little glimpses and it's like, cause he still has that charm,
right,
and all that. But it's like, but all the things that he's saying and the actions that he is undertaking, it's like, oh, this is a very, very bad person. And yet it's like he's so likable that the reprehensible things that he is saying and doing aren't like, they don't completely negate that sort of charisma. And it's just like, oh, like it's not that you're rooting for him per se, because again, bad guy, very, very bad guy, but there's like, I don't know how to explain it. It's like he's like if Hans Gruber was nice, I guess. Like that's part of it.
Yeah.
Speaking of Hans Gruber, there are more than a few nods to Die Hard in this movie,
nice.
Which, I'm here for it. If you want to get technical, I mean, Die Hard 2 did actually take place at LAX. So if you want to make that argument at Christmas time, because this movie is at Christmas time. One of the things I sort of noted was, you know, like 5% more Christmas, and you could make the argument and slide this into the sort of the Christmas action movie canon, mm-hmm. if you wanted to. Doesn't quite get there. It's definitely set at Christmas time, but it doesn't quite. We just needed like one or two more like Christmassy, not even full scenes, but like some visual references or what have you. But all that being said, super fun, like super propulsive. Like, don't think about the plot too much. Because, there are certain logical and logistical leaps that do not make a lot of sense if you really sort of investigate them. But if you're willing to just sort of sit back and let this movie wash over you, it's fun. It's high paced. The performances, like I said, are very good. A couple of pretty okay, like sort of like pursuit fight scenes. Like it all comes together really, really nicely. And again, the truth is, Netflix originals at this time of year, like, they do not have to be good movies.
Right,
often are not good movies. And so when one actually is good, and I'm far from alone in this, the critical response to this movie has actually been very positive. But when it is good, it's like, oh, it's like this fun surprise almost, where you're just like, oh, I was just figuring this would be background noise while I farted around on my phone for 2 hours. I'm actually watching this movie. And honestly, for Netflix originals, that's a pretty good endorsement.
Nice. Well, I'm looking forward to it. Sounds good. Yeah, I was pulled in by the trailer. I thought, man, yeah, I never thought of Bateman in that type of role. But yes, I can see it work.
It is remarkable how well it works. And again, I talk about this movie being good. I think it would suffer greatly from a less powerful performance in that role. But he really makes it his own, and he just nails it.
All right, that's the word on Carry On. Tell us, Alan, about Kraven the Hunter, please.
So, all right. So for those who are unfamiliar, so Sony owns the rights to, owns the film rights to Spider-Man. They purchased them from Marvel back in the late 90s when Marvel was going through bankruptcy. This is pre-MCU. This is before anyone had any idea of what was to come. So obviously, once the MCU started blowing up, it's like, well, Spider-Man is hands down the most popular Marvel character. We need to get that character into these films. And so Sony, at great expense to Marvel/Disney/whoever, leased Spider-Man to the MCU. Great. But the thing about it is, Sony owns the IP for the Spider-Man universe writ large.
Right.
And so they're like, well, we have, we own all these characters. Why don't we make movies with them? Without Spider-Man. And look, I don't know how these decisions get made. I assume it's a lot of cocaine. But someone somewhere is like, you know what we should do? We should make a bunch of movies about Spider-Man villains without Spider-Man in them.
They have a retreat and they get together and talk about it, I think. Let's put our heads together.
So what you get is this weird amalgam, and some of them have worked okay. They made 3 Venom movies, but that's, you've got Tom Hardy, who just clearly very much wanted to play that character, and so that helps you certainly. But then you have, oh crap, like that god awful Morbius movie, I'm kind of shocked Dakota Johnson isn't in jail for killing her agent after Madam Web. And now we have what promises to be the last, from what I understand, Kraven the Hunter. For those unfamiliar, Kraven the Hunter is a Spider-Man villain. One of the earlier ones, actually. He's gone through a number of iterations, but the basic deal is he started off as the vaguely foreign, like Eastern European kind of hunter, and his whole deal was he was going to hunt Spider-Man because it was the comic books in the 60s. It didn't have to make sense, but that was what he was going to do. But he's been a recurring villain in the Spider-Man universe ever since. Gone through different origins, different power sets, what have you. But the character has been around. So what we have here is yet another reinvestigation of the character. Starring Aaron Taylor Johnson as the titular Kraven the Hunter. He is basically just this, very superpowered, vaguely superpowered dude who hunts people down. Bad people.
Well, yes.
Bad course, people. Sure, because sure. Here's the thing. You can't make a villain movie. You got to make an anti-hero movie. Mm, so yeah. So here we are. So we get to meet him as he, does some, crazy hunter stuff. Then there's an extended flashback, an unnecessarily extended flashback, where we meet young Craven, and we learn about how he went to prep school in, you know, upstate New York, because, of course, with his half-brother, Dimitri. And again, I don't remember the young actors' names. It doesn't matter. They're brought together by their father when it turns out that their mother has passed away. And I want to make sure I get the name of the dad just right, because he is okay. His father's name is Nikolai Kravinoff. And he is played with scenery chewing glee by a thickly accented Russell Crowe.
Whoa.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. My man Russ is having a good time. But he's brought in, it's like, oh, yep, your mother's dead. I have to make you tough now. And so off to, I assume Africa, it's never really said, off to go on a big game hunt because, you know.
Sure.
Because, you know, rich criminal oligarchs, they like going on safari, I guess.
Yeah.
So they go and, you know, they're going to hunt and he's going to make a man out of his kids. And then there's an incident and our boy, Sergei is near death. He's saved by a young woman with inexplicable magic powers. Again, it's never made clear, but her name is Calypso, saves his life, but saves his life in a manner that makes him more than man.
Oh,
the power and glory of the animal kingdom is inside him now, and so so we get to see him do a lot of like running like a cat and like jumping on stuff and being strong and all. It's eventually we get back to the present day, and Craven has to save his brother because his brother gets. You know what? Even as I'm saying it, I'm like, oh, it's all just so dumb.
Dimitri's in trouble.
Dimitri is in trouble, and only the mysterious figure known as Craven, aka the Hunter, can save him. And you know, brothers and gangsters and a lot of like fighting and stabbing and weird animal parkour and that's basically it. Like I could parse out the plot for you, but nobody needs that. It would be a spoiler for one, for two, it doesn't really make a ton of sense. So like I'll let you find out for yourself.
Okay.
This is not a good movie, Rich. as my movie going companion stated at the end of as the credits rolled, turned to me and said, "Well, that was definitely a movie."
Wow.
And it's like, yes, no, the pictures moved 24 frames per second.
Mm-hmm.
I had some popcorn and a soda.
It had to be a movie.
This is what I'm saying. It's just like conceptually, like movies like this were doomed from the start because comic book villains are defined by the heroes that they fight. It doesn't necessarily work the other way around, but like villains are who they are by definition almost supporting characters, and to expect them to sort of carry their own film, even if you do like the little twists, it's like, oh no, he's not like evil, he's just like kind of evil, and like he kills people but they're mostly bad. And again, I get what you're trying to do. It's like you've got the IP. Like you're looking at all these folks just making it hand over fist. And I can see someone just turning around and being like, you know what? They made $500 million off that GD Guardians of the Galaxy. Why the heck can't I make a Cart Craven the Hunter movie?
Right.
The reason is nobody's going to go see it.
No.
It did not do very well at the box office. It finished in a very distant third behind two films that have been out for a while. In Moana 2 and Wicked, I expect it's going to plummet even further and almost certainly be a big, big money loser for the Sony folks. All this being said, there are some highlights. There are some, there are plenty of Easter eggs for the comic book fans out there. As someone who cut his teeth during that sort of golden age, like I'm pretty familiar with the character of Kraven the Hunter. And so I got a little bit here and there, which was kind of nice. I will say, I mentioned Russell Crowe. He was delightful. He's clearly having a good time. Not full on like stuffing tissues in his cheeks like Brando, but it's like you are really just rolling this accent around in your mouth and you are having a ball. And you know, Aaron Taylor Johnson, now he's someone I'm not sure how people feel about him. Like, he's a pretty talented dude. He's done some stuff. This is not his first foray into superhero-dom. You know, he was Quicksilver in the MCU. Like he was Kick-Ass in the Kick-Ass movies. You know, dude clearly did some work on himself to get ready for this movie. You know, he's one of the names that keeps coming up as a replacement for Daniel Craig as, yep, James Bond, which makes a lot of sense.
Sure.
He's got action chops, he's a pretty good actor. Like, but it's just one of those things where it's like, you can just tell that he really genuinely thought that this movie was going to be huge. Like he did the work, like he's really working hard. And again, his performance is fine. He's doing a good job. It's just like, he is like, everything about this movie is undercut by the fundamental sort of shakiness of its, of the premise of its being made, which is, does anyone really want to see a movie about a Spider-Man villain that doesn't have Spider-Man in it? And again, as we've gradually come to understand, Sony, and hopefully Sony has learned this lesson as well, the answer is no. We don't want that. We want Spider-Man. And if you want to put Spider-Man villains in a Spider-Man movie,
sure,
like, let's go. I've said many times that I would love to see a Sinister Six movie with Spider-Man, but I mean, who knows? The truth is that this whole experiment may have torpedoed any chance of that happening anytime soon. Which, again, it's fine, and it kind of pains me a little bit to say this, but I mean, there haven't been a ton of superhero movies in the last year or so, and I've kind of been okay with it. Like, I didn't think that was ever a place I was going to land, but I mean, it's been so saturated, and it's a chance. I think we're looking at the very least, a soft reboot and maybe a hard reboot, and they're probably going to start the cycle over again. And I think, I don't know, we'll see how it goes. I think they might lose folks, but again, I've said several times, oh, well, you know, those Marvel folks, they really did it to themselves this time. And then, I turn around and whatever it was made $1.2 billion.
Right, right.
So, I mean, I don't know. I'll be interested to see what happens next.
There's the word on Kraven the Hunter. Thank you, Alan.
You're welcome.
Have a good week.
I will. Thank you.
See you next Monday. It is 5:45 here on Downtown. We'll take a break when we...